Taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
Our baby, Alex Pacella.
Hey.
And a special guest today, Brooke Muller. Welcome.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Today, we are talking about a delightful treat from the past that we didn't know about. Well, I didn't know about. I mean, we knew about it. I don't know what I'm saying. Listen to La Cage aux Folles, and Jay and I were both like, we should have liked this show a long time ago.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later. How's Baby Met World?
Baby's Met Some World. So now that we're finished with Act 1 script-wise of the musical, we're kind of digging into the lyrics that we want for the songs we want to put on the demo. And I've been kind of like having sessions with Miles where we go over the lyrics that I wrote, because I wrote kind of first draft lyrics of everything. And I, being me, I'm like, oh my God, these are all garbage and please fix what I did. And he's like, I fixed this, this, and this, and the rest is fine. I'm like, oh yeah, it probably is. That's how I am.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta trust yourself, bud.
Yeah, yeah. Two, I was in Rite Aid the other day, and I saw they have the Halloween stuff up, and I saw a bunch of little like plastic novelty dolls of what I can only describe as knockoff Audrey 2. It was the same exact plant design, and then you would hit a button and it would talk, but it wasn't the cool like feed me Seymour. It was this little like nerdy like, oh, someone asked me what kind of plant is that, I said come closer I'll show you, and they said, what do you feed a plant like that, I said come closer I'll show you. I'm like, this plant is so much more unpleasant than the other plant that also
I do not like that.
Yeah. And I almost wanted to buy it for a goof, but I'm like, I don't know, I've been calling it Audrey
1.5. Yourself. Just like, not quite.
Not quite, not quite. And then other than that, I've become obsessed with the musical Parade. Like, I really liked La Cage. I had to rip myself away from Parade to properly listen to it. I think I've listened to the old Red Hills of Home like 30 times in the last 2 years.
To the point where, to my ninth grade experience.
You know when you do something so much that you kind of forget you're doing it? Like, I was walking down the street and I was like, oh, it's so pretty with the sun and it's a nice fall temperature and the sound of, oh, that's the old Red Hills of Home. I forgot I was still listening to it. It just blended in to my life. Also digging into the actual history of the time period that show is representing, that I think the show doesn't even fully elaborate on, that we'll get into when we cover. Point is, I know we were going to do Once Next. We're doing Parade.
Great. I love a switch, a game time switch.
A quick change, if you will.
Yes. Brooke, have you met any world recently? / I think you're having quite a world meeting day.
Yeah. Not super recently. I went to the Curtain Up concert in Times Square a couple weekends ago, which was really fun. That was like a good first step back into seeing everything. So many of the different shows were performing, which was really exciting to see everybody reunite. But yeah, today I am going to see Hamilton for the first time in 5 years of waiting. So very, very excited for that. And then Tuesday, I'm going to Little Shop. So it should be a busy couple days.
Oh, is Hamilton your first show back?
Yeah, Hamilton is my first show back. I waited specifically to make it like the big re-entrance to my like Broadway going lifestyle again. So it was a rough month in September seeing shows opening and like not being there, especially like with Hadestown opening, wanted to be there so bad. But I felt like Hamilton was a perfect like first step back into everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's you made casual. The right choice.
Yeah. What was your last show?
Book of Mormon. I saw it with my friend like on a whim in February of 2020. And then I had tickets actually to Hadestown like a couple days after everything shut down. So
when does Mormon reopen?
October? It is October.
Yeah.
At some point, perhaps this month.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That really hasn't been part of the conversation is like of shows reopening. It's just like,
yeah. They are.
Yeah.
I looked it up the other day because I had the exact same thought.
All right.
I think shows that I forget is just running forever. Like, yeah. I'm happy about it. But like, and I'm like, oh yeah, Book of Mormon is a thing. I still got to get on that. And like, it's been around for, when did that show open? Like 2012?
2011, 2012.
Yeah, like it's been running for 10 years and I always forget that it has been doing such.
And like, we saw it a couple of years ago and even still like 10 years into its run, that show still slaps. It's still real good. Like, yeah, it's still the funniest show on Broadway, though. There's no, but yeah, but it's one of those things that's been running so long, people forget. But to that point, we keep talking about Wicked coming back, but I also think their marketing has been on point.
Wicked?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, somehow Wicked, Lion King, and Hamilton, different producers, though same theater owner, but they all like combined powers for like the marketing of their grand reopening because they all opened on the same day. But Chicago also opened that day. They were like, the three of us, these cool cats and kittens, like we opened today. Pay no mention to the New Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Or the the ambassador. Mm. Where Chicago was also opening.
I didn't even know Chicago was opening that day until I was like, oh, okay. So there are four shows opening today, which is great. But like you never heard anything about it until suddenly there it was.
Yeah. I think it must have been like a Nederlander thing.
Yeah,
the three of them all coming together like that, because everyone was like, it's so weird, they're not the same production team, like they're not that da 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 da, and I was like, it's a real estate game, baby.
Oh yeah.
The theater owners absolutely want people in their houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a business. I don't know if we all forgot about that.
And it's a business that has been closed.
Amidst all the TikToks and fun and whatnot, but this is about money.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ratatouille was fun. However, these shows owe us a lot of money. Whoops.
Please go inside the Gershwin.
Please.
That's my favorite way to say please.
Please. Please come see shows. We're so sorry.
Have we met any kind of worlds? We watched Dear Evan Hansen.
We did watch Dear Evan Hansen.
What did you think?
I have to be 100% honest with you. I actually liked it. Okay. I think
he doesn't look any older than the cast of Riverdale. Everyone's so mad at him.
Everyone was so mad. He really looks just fine. He looks just fine. I think it's, and I don't want to tempt the fates in this regard, but sometimes theater Twitter goes a little nuts and I don't think it was warranted in this regard. I feel like the community at large kind of turned on this thing in a way that I don't think was necessarily fair. They're like, well, they changed the show and he's not going to get his comeuppance. And I would argue that in the movie, his comeuppance is even a little bit more like visceral.
Well, they show him dealing with the aftermath, which they do not show in the
play. And like movie, you know, like the old Brian Plofsky adage, you know, movies are in three acts, plays are in two. Like the third act of him kind of like reconciling with what happened, like actually I think fills out the movie and fills out the story a little bit more and makes it a little bit more palatable. Cause it's like, the problem that people have with the show is that like, he does this bad thing and then it's just kind of over. Like he gets, people find out and he's like, I'm so sorry, this is bad. And then it's dead. Welcome to the show. That's it. Goodbye. Whereas in
here's
the movie,
an apple orchard.
We're in the movie, he kind of like atones a little bit.
Okay.
But it's almost more, a little more subtle. It's not bad.
Yeah. And it goes to kind of like what I was saying a couple months ago, that I get annoyed at theater people are great, but they kind of have two settings. This was masterful and this was the worst thing anyone's ever seen. And I'm like, you correct. Can't actually only feel those emotions. This is on some level a little bit performative.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Theater people are performative?
You don't say.
I was unaware.
Theater Twitter acting theatrical. A what now?
Yeah.
There's drama and drama? Huh?
I was sad that they cut Good For You from the movie, from what I've heard. That was like my song. So I'm going to miss
that
one.
Yeah, it slaps.
I know.
So good.
How did you feel about the songs that they did cut and the ones they added? Do you think it all added up to be satisfying anyway, or were you feeling the loss of those?
Well, we were frustrated over here when we found out that they were cutting Does Anybody Have a Map?
Me too.
But Amy Adams and
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore. Well, thank you. They both give such solid performances. I'm going to be honest with you. Amy Adams may be the best part of the movie in that the look on Amy Adams's face and her performance. I would also lie about knowing her dead son. It was like one of those things where she was so heartbroken. I was like, yeah, he was cool. Like I would have too. Like her performance makes you believe his choices.
Yeah.
Because she's just such a mess. And it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
So like, the performances kind of encapsulate the song, mm-hmm. actually. Like, they service the narrative the same way the song does. So I think it's fine. Like, I think a lot of the changes of, like, losing songs are just for runtime at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Because they don't change anything thematically about the show by losing the songs. But, yeah. But,
I agree.
I liked the movie. I liked it.
And we were talking about, did we like it because everyone told us it was going to be so bad? But we were like, this is fine. This is passable. This is a fun thing.
Hype is a fickle mistress.
I mean, it really is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it really can, one way or the other. But we also like an underdog. So sometimes we're like, hey, we thought it was great. How dare you?
That's fair.
Yeah. So yeah, we actually met some more. Look at them.
We did it. I'm trying to think. If I'm meeting any other world. Oh, I bought theater tickets for the first time in a while.
To what?
Caroline or Change on October 9th.
I'm going to that in November.
Yay! That'll be my first musical back. I saw a play.
Awesome.
Unless for some reason I decide to go see a musical.
Yeah.
Although, this is me meeting world. I re-downloaded Today Ticks and I scroll through.
Love it. My favorite app, see. Like, honestly.
And everything on Today Ticks is a lot more expensive than it used to be on Today Ticks because it's all.
That's why I haven't downloaded it again.
Which is why I might just go see Chicken and Biscuits because there are $25 tickets and it's at Circle in the Square and I will see anything there forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Now, shall we word of the week?
Word of the week.
For a surprise segment, we have a guest, Brooke, with us who has something to chat with us about called Call Time Broadway.
Yeah, I just said Today Ticks was my favorite app, but that was kind of a lie because my favorite app is this new app that we created called Call Time Broadway, which is a new inclusive social hub for theater-specific content. So essentially it takes all the different pieces of the big social platforms that you know, like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and combines them into one platform whose sole purpose is for theater conversation, theater connections. We wanted to give the community a space to celebrate theater without like fake news and politics and anti-vaxxers and all of the noise that tends to take away from the content we actually want to see on our social feeds. And, you know, you can tailor your Twitter page so you're only following theater people. You can just follow theater conversations. But at its core, that's not what like Twitter is for. It's not what Instagram's for. But that is what Call Time Broadway is for. So it's a news feed like you would see on other apps. You have your own profile that you can fill out. We tried to make it really expansive so you can add in your reel and your bio and your headshot and all that fun things tailored to the theater industry. And then what we're really excited about is that it has multiple groups. So there's a group specific for directing or stage managing or acting, wide variety across the industry. And we're hoping that this is going to open up conversation and allow people to have discussions that they might not usually hear. Who's really interested in directing. You don't know all that much yet. You don't know where to look for resources. These groups are open to everybody in the community. So you could jump into that directing group and join in on conversations that people are having, people who may already be directors, people who have resources to share. So we're hoping it's going to be a really great way for people to learn what they're interested in, hopefully a great way to connect with other people, celebrate some new work that they're creating, and just be able to have a safe space to talk about the art that they love.
That's incredible. Any yeah. app that says, let's take this nice thing and cut out anti-vaxxers, I'm for it.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, we're not held to, like, a board, like, you know, Twitter has their stakeholder board that they need to report to. Like, it's us moderating the page, and we have very clear community guidelines so people can see, you know, exactly what is and isn't allowed on the app. And if there's something that we think violates those community guidelines, we have the power to go in and remove it. So we really want to make sure this stays a safe and welcoming place for everybody to enjoy what they love.
It's interesting. I think social media is actually going to start going in this direction in that you're right. I mean, like, there is just social media is awesome. It's a great tool and it's a nice way to connect with people, but also there is a staggering amount of noise. So I think, like, much like, mm-hmm. you know, the expansion of, like, when cable became a thing and then all of these channels started to specify, like, exactly what they do, I feel like social media is trending towards that. And that, like, mm-hmm. you know, I would love to talk about theater on Twitter, but also, like, the amount of other stuff I have to compete with, it's like, why not create? So I think you're actually, like, kind of on the cutting edge a little bit on this.
Yeah, because why be on theater Instagram, theater Twitter, and theater TikTok when you can be on one single platform?
Exactly. And that's the thing that we realized, like, it gets exhausting to have to maintain so many different profiles. And, like, for instance, take your show, right? Having to go into Twitter and Instagram and all the different platforms and post about it, you know, it's time consuming. It gets to be a little exhausting. So here on Call Time, you have one place to go. We have a podcasting group that you can post to, and it'll post to the podcasting group, also show up in the main feed of people who follow you. So it's just a quick and easy way to really get the conversations in that you want.
That's really cool.
Now, my question is,
Okay.
So, like, you were inspired for this to make this thing. Mm-hmm. We all know. I guess my question is, like, what inspired this idea? And I'm more trying to sip the tea kind of thing. You know what I mean? Because, like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, we're creating our own, so we don't have to deal with the other stuff. Like, was there, like, an inciting incident that made you be like, you know what? I think we need our own thing.
So I work as a social media manager for my quote unquote day job. Gotcha. Manage the channels of a major CPG brand. So I am just in the social feeds day in and day out for many, many hours of the day. And I found that it was burning me out to have to focus on everything else when really I was going, you know, online to talk about, say, the Dear Evan Hansen movie, or talk about, you know, what shows I was excited for. And then to have to read everything on top of that takes a toll on you that I don't think you realize until it's almost too late, where you reach a point where you're like, I can't look at this anymore. And I found that, you know, my passion for connecting with the theater community was starting to wane a little bit. And we pinpointed it to being, you know, something that didn't even have to do with it. So now being able to have a space where all you're talking about is theater and talking about what makes you happy, I think for me at least, has been revitalizing already. So we're hoping to kind of spread that to other people who may be feeling the same way.
Yeah, gotcha. I forget where I read it, but I remember hearing someone say, like, social media may turn out, in that big conglomerate kind of burn you out sense, may turn out to be our generation's smoking. Like, we didn't think it was that bad at the time, but we were all like on it constantly. It's, and then we'll go.
Interesting.
It's funny.
We'll counteract that.
It's funny how you say that. Whenever I'm waiting tables, you used to know when you were waiting tables that when people lit up a cigarette that they were probably, like, wrapping up their meal. And then you were like, oh, let's offer dessert, or maybe we'll get them a check. Now, when the table's on their phone, I know that they're wrapping up.
Yep.
It's like, it's the same idea. But Brooke, to your point, I really thought you were just about to say, it probably were old message boards.
That's so funny. We've needed something that wasn't the Broadway World message boards mess of a...
Everyone is so mean on there. Everyone is so mean.
So mean.
You're supposed to be connecting with, you know, your fellow community and talking about something that you all say you love. Like, what's the point of that, you know? So that's what we're hoping to mitigate.
Remember when they got shut down?
Yeah.
I've never been there. This is kind of sounding like theater 4chan kind of a thing. Like,
yeah, you don't go there, Alex. You're our boy, and you
that's keeping you safe.
Whatever the light touches, Alex. Okay,
that's the elephant graveyard.
It's the elephant graveyard. And now the normal question we ask our guests, what is your like personal history with theater in general and Broadway? And I guess you can lead into like how that brought you to being the social media maven of the Broadway world.
Yeah, I actually, it's interesting. So I had a bit of a different path into theater. I feel like a lot of times people grow up with it and it's with them from the beginning. That was not the case for me. I grew up, you know, with High School Musical and Grease and like all the movie musicals, but it wasn't really something that was super on my radar until I went to college. I went to Elon University in North Carolina. Yes, very big music theater program down there, which was great. And I worked in an office that worked really closely with the performing arts department. So I started going to shows. I started making friends who had done theater their whole lives. So suddenly it was all around me. And it sounds really cliche, and I used to be really embarrassed to admit this, but one day one of my friends was like, have you heard this song from a show called Hamilton? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, George Washington is a character, he sings. And I was like, that sounds crazy. But I listened to it, and it almost was like a missing piece of my life fell in into place I didn't even know was missing, which sounds really dramatic, but is very, very true. And from there, I just dove into anything and everything I could get my hands on. So lots of podcasts, lots of books, lots of cast recordings, and just like gave myself an education. And I really felt like I had a lot of catching up to do. For a couple months there, I kind of was like, okay, I'm not a performer. I don't have performance talent. I came really late to the game. Like, is there a place for me in the theater industry? You know, it was almost a weird imposter syndrome, but I knew it was something that was suddenly so special to me and something I knew I needed to be connected with. So I started writing a blog called Backstage with B, started interviewing different performers and, you know, people in the theater industry, both that I knew, reaching out to people online, got to learn a lot that way. Really gave me like a sense of being. And then from that, I'm now launching Call Time and hoping that'll take us to some fun new journeys.
That's awesome.
So fun. We're excited for you. Welcome.
I'm also excited. Thank you.
When is Call Time live? Like, could we download it right now if we wanted to?
It is live. Yeah, you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram, Call Time B-Way. And then there is a link to the app and Android stores, you can download and join for free.
Perfect. That's great. Will probably.
Honestly,
I'm like, yeah, we will.
There's a place we can post, you know, a podcast. You know, that's something we like to do. So
follow Broadway Baby Pod. We're already on there. So.
Yeah. Oh, are we really?
Ahead of the game.
There's a place for us.
Wrong show today. We're talking about La Cage aux Folles.
La Cage aux Folles.
As we start always, Alex, do you have a personal history with La Cage?
No, the only, sort of. So the first day I ever heard of La Cage, I only knew what the content of the show was when we decided to do it. I just heard the name in the context of when we covered Sunday in the Park with George, this had defeated it, which now that I like La Cage, I'm not as mad about, but I'm still not particularly happy about. But as I looked it up, I found out that it was based on a movie that was remade as another movie called Birdcage, which I saw when I was 9 years old in the theater. I don't know if that's fully appropriate, but my parents were like, oh, Nathan Lane and Robin Williams, he loves The Lion King. Let's go to that. And we all had a great time. I've seen a couple clips from it since that are very, very funny. I don't know how well it ages because it's the 90s and that's just
That movie ages incredibly. That movie's amazing.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
The Birdcage is one of, yeah, top tier.
It's also kind of fun now that I know the musical, seeing his little clips from the movie and going, oh, that's this song, that's this song. Like when Robin Williams is like, you take the toast and you smear, men smear. And he goes, I pierce the toast. Great joke. Great joke. That was it. Dove into it this week. There's pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm about the same. I always knew of the show. I knew what it was about because of The Birdcage, which I actually am not sure that I've ever seen The Birdcage all the way through. which is going to make my husband mad at me. I'm sure that I have, but I like can't remember.
Gotta watch a package.
Okay.
It's the shoes. Come on.
I remember watching the Tony performance, which we just watched again today. And I think that is the reason I did not see the show when it was revived, because it wasn't a very good commercial. Yeah. Why did they just do the best of, what's that song even called? The best of time is now.
Yeah. It just wasn't it. It just wasn't it.
No, it wasn't the best one to show me. And I was like, oh, that show's probably nice.
Yeah. I feel like you got to do We Are What We Are.
Yeah. 100%.
So I've never seen the show live. I had never listened through the cast album all the way through until this weekend. And I very much enjoyed. Jay Bird?
About the same. I knew The Birdcage really well. It's one of my favorite movies. And then, yeah, I knew that it was the same plot, but I knew I Am What I Am, but that was about it. It was, this was actually a pleasant surprise. I didn't realize how much I was going to enjoy listening through because I didn't have any really frame of reference. But yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. And then, like Alex said, my main frame of reference for Lacage is Jerry Herman, like taking a swipe at Sondheim during his Tony speech, saying there was a rumor that the Hummable Dune was dead, but it is alive and well at the palace. Yeah.
I think when I first listened to this, like, I was a little bit like, I mean, I guess this is fine actively because I was mad about him saying that. I'm like, Jerry Herman, don't take an attitude. Like, it took me a minute to love the songs. I was like, oh, these are pretty good. And then I watched a bootleg with the book, and the book actually really elevates everything because it's Harry Firestein, and it's really, the jokes are really great. And then I kind of fell in love with the songs after, now that I knew kind of
in context.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happened to us too.
Yeah. It's a fun album, but like, it's Sunday. Come on. What are you?
Yeah, I know. Brooke, do you have any personal histories with this show?
I really don't. I knew Gavin Creel was in it at one point, and I've heard him mention it in a couple interviews, and that was really it. So this was my first week listening to it, and I was also really pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it.
I mean, we just get into talking about our opinions, mostly because as I was listening through and realized that the book wasn't there, I thought, Alex isn't going to like this one because the book is not on the album, and that's what he prefers. Yeah. And so we've listened to shows together too much, is what has happened. And then he said exactly those words just now. But it's so true that Jay and I were talking about the songs are so like diegetic. Like it's so much like a lot of the songs you see in their show, or like they're just kind of speaking to each other. So you don't get a lot of the book.
And I feel like a lot.
And then reading the plot, I was like, oh, this show's very good.
A lot of the emotional moments that come come to a head in song, I think are because the songs are so deftly written. I was like, at a certain point, I was like, this has got to be a slow burn in the book. I was like, the book definitely like builds to this. It has to, because like, this is such an evocative moment that like, it feels a little unearned if you're just listening through, but in the context of like, Harvey Firestein wrote the book to this. Like, yeah, this is probably, yeah, this, I gotta see this show. I'm bummed I've never seen, I've had so many opportunities to see this show. my favorite little, when I was doing research about the show, my favorite fun fact was that when in like the beginning of the production of this, they had hired an entire creative team and then brought on new financial backers and then immediately fired everyone and brought on the team that actually put the show up, which I think is hilarious. Like,
yeah. And they were going to, because they couldn't get the rights to the movie. They were like going to set it in New Orleans and make it kind of different and change all the character names. And then they got the rights to the play that the movie is based on. Mm-hmm. So then they just made it that.
I love that they keep the Frenchness of it all. Like they kind of Spring Awakening a little bit, where it's like, oh, we're not changing any of these severely German names. It's more fun if we just, his name is Albin, and you know, and then they speak English and it could be anywhere, but like they actually lean into.
But this is my son, Jean-Michel. Yeah,
exactly. Dandon.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is just the story of I Am What I Am, is that Arthur Lawrence says that they had nothing set. So like, I met with them and they had like an idea of the show, but all they had was the song I Am What I Am, and that's what made him sign on to direct.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Jay, that you say slow burn, because the plot is very much a slow burn, but also because it's Harvey Fierstein, the dialogue is all quips and like very quick kind of instant gratification bits. But it's interesting that you can make a very joke dense slow burn.
Yeah.
And it does it really well.
It's one of those shows that like, oh, this is funny. I'm having a great time. These are songs that are accessible to my ear. And then like, oh no. Like this is, there's some heart here, which I think is exactly what they were going for. You can see in like Jerry Herman and Arthur Lawrence talking about that they didn't want, that it could have gone too political. It could have gone like too much into like a gay rights diatribe, if you will. And then they kept on track of just like, this needs to be an accessible show to the middle America audiences. And that will be a stronger way to have them feel for these people.
Yeah.
In 1983.
I think it's also stronger for it because it's kind of one of the just little vibes I was getting. I was like, this is kind of like Cabaret, but happy. And I mean that as a good thing. Like it's about show people, but it's also about, whereas Cabaret is about people who are like, oh, I don't mess with politics because they're ignorant and that is their downfall. These are people that are using their theatricality to process what's going on. So they're not like Cabaret is about shutting out problems. This is about facing them head on with what you do. And I think that really is cool.
And like owning yourself within that. Yes. I think that's a really interesting way to put that. A happy cabaret.
Yeah.
Like a hopeful cabaret.
A happaray. Yeah.
Anyway, it won 6 Tony Awards, including musical score and book. And George Hearn won for Al Ben. And then Douglas Hodge also won, I believe, for The Revival.
Yeah.
Just straight boys playing Al Ben, which is the main thing that I realized reading this. And you can read an article from 1983 where George Hearn says some things about being scared to play this role and like thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to do that in front of like God and Times Square. And it's like, well, those two are not the same, but yes, you are.
I don't really know him from Sweeney Todd. So he nailed it, but it was a gear change from where he lives in my brain.
But also how funny, Sweeney Todd is what beat Jerry Herman in 1979. And then he like stole George Hearn and was like, you need him to win a musical? I'll do it. And like brought him into Lacage and then he won. Yeah, he did a great job. But I think there is something interesting and I didn't have time this morning to like really get into it and unpack it. But I was just like, there's something very interesting to the fact that like only straight men have been like the opening casts of these two main characters.
You have to understand this was when this, I mean,
in the cast, 80s, I understand no one wanted to out themselves. It would have brought so much scrutiny to the personal life of whoever was doing this. And so it almost made sense that it had to be like a straight married man, but who is a theater person and who obviously knows and loves the community that they're telling the story about. But as we talk about theater, social media and how it can eat itself from the inside, would never fly now.
Yeah.
Is it time for another revival? Maybe. Could you see this coming back and really doing something new with it?
I want to go. I mean, straight up, I'll go.
Yeah, me too. And,
like to see the character sing I Am What I Am as a person who is also living that truthful life and out and in the open, and audiences who are loving that person for themselves. I think it would be just a really emotional night at the theater.
Do you know what my favorite part of I Am What I Am is?
I do not.
It's like 2 minutes and 12 seconds. It's not a long song. It's the kind of thing where it's kind of like a Mama Rose kind of moment as far as musical theater goes. It's a Don't Rain on My Parade kind of song. And those songs usually skew 7 minutes long. Like those, they just go and go and go and more power to them. But I was the conciseness of a lot of the music in this and the fact that a lot of the music in this show gets to the point very quickly, I actually appreciate. And it only speaks to like when you have a strong enough book writer, it speaks to like the play was already good. We don't need to really muck about in rewriting this show to make it better. We already have a good play ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Let's just add some songs to like accentuate moments and move on.
Yeah. My favorite thing about I Am What I Am, which I was going to include in Little Loves, but I'll just say it now, is that I love the genre of theater song in which it is a song that the character knows they are singing. Like it is a diegetic number. They know they're singing it. And then they have their character in that moment has a realization within the song they have presumably sung a million times.
Oh yeah. It's like what we were talking about with Hedwig. That show isn't supposed to go off the rails, but all those ones that went okay aren't the one that matter.
Yes. And that's, I mean, that's essentially why theater and movies exist. Why are we watching this day in this person's exactly. life? Why are we especially watching if it's this moment in time? If it's done before, why are we watching him sing it this time? And it's because of the people who are watching him sing it that night at the theater. Yeah. And then so when he decides, I mean, I'm sure actors play it different ways. I have not seen it, as we've said. But when he takes off his wig or has, you know, that moment of the reveal, like whether he's choosing to or it's just an emotional backlash, it just makes that moment all the more stronger when something that has been a confidence builder for so long really does build confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I enjoy it very much. It's so good. What else can we say? Jay and I were both just like sitting in a room reading a bunch of like fun facts and telling each other. And I was like, I'm on that paragraph too. which is how we've been watching musicals for so long is just reading and yeah. listening, well, which just brings me back to like middle school of reading, like having the CD and reading the, what was that thing called?
Libretto.
Girl, I don't know what you're talking about.
The little, like the booklet that comes with a CD, but no one knows what those are anymore. The liner notes? The
insert?
Yeah, the insert.
Yeah. I think we can move on to Little Loves. I think we've kind of gotten there.
Absolutely. You want to go first?
Also, this one's got to see Hamilton. This one's got to see Hamilton, all right?
That's true. We've got to get you out of here on time.
This one's got to see, like, it is a very, she is a very important day for this one, all right? She is.
Where are you having lunch? Do not eat something that will make you sick.
No, don't. No. We're going. Sweetie, no seafood. Don't do it.
We're going to Friedman's.
I love Friedman's.
Much better.
Potato pancakes.
Yeah. Jay ate some like squid ink pasta that didn't sit well during burn. Ooh. Yeah. So, so your little loves of La Cage aux Folles.
Yeah. My little loves, I specifically like, and I appreciate the timing of it. I don't really have one little love. I just really liked this show. It's all one big love for me, but specifically the moment, the line in I Am What I Am about coming out of the closet in that way, it's in within the rhyme scheme and within the song, it reads as just another lyric. It's just like kind of in the same milieu, but like in the time, and you have to remember, like in the time it was written, the concept of like coming out of the closet was like such a big and scary thing. And the fact that like they just like kind of slide it in there, and it wasn't necessarily part of the lexicon yet, but like everyone who knew that the importance of that line knew. And I just think like there's a lot of like subtle language use in this show that was really signaling to people who knew, but also it was really, this show does an excellent job of, it's the best like first take into getting like into expanding gay rights, and that like it was like, we're putting on a show that is cool. It's the Modern Family of the 80s, in that like you know, Cam and Mitchell became a household name and a household couple, but like they had, like, it was one of those things where they were really like a little bit more subdued for like the first couple of seasons. And then it slowly got more and more. I don't know. And this show was just a little bit more, way more delicate than I think people expect.
And I think that's part of why a lot of this stuff has aged really well. And it's because it's like, it was that stuff that was sort of signals, but now it can be more text, and that fight is still ongoing. And I was about to say, like, oh, you know, there's no Kinky Boots without Lacage. And then I remembered, literally, because they're written by the same person. So.
Yes, absolutely. And as far as, like, contracts go, if you've been a Kajel, you have been a, oh, what are they called? Lola's dancers.
I don't remember.
Great. Right.
They are Kinky Boots. You always look to me like I'm gonna know, and I very rarely know.
You're very smart.
I don't know about that.
My Little Loves, Song in the Sand.
Yeah,
is My Little Love, because I saw my friend Robbie Roselle sing it at a concert at 54 Below to his husband, and I didn't really know that song, and it just made me cry. And I just love any songs about being in love. And loving each other and being married. Speaking of being in love and being married, My Little Love is actually a direction from Arthur Lawrence and the out-of-town tryouts in Boston. They said that Gene Barry, who was playing George, was okay, but like never outstanding. And they were talking about firing him. And Arthur Lawrence, right before opening night, gave him the direction to just always look into George Hearn's eyes whenever they're on stage together. Just always make direct eye contact so the audience can feel your connection. And that like changed the game and it was all better.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true because it's about them and the audience needs to feel how in love they are.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have that connection, it just turns into a man dressed as a woman bit the whole time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it's not them, if it's not... If there's no
because real... it can't be played for laughs.
No,
like even though it is comedy, the joke is not like ha ha, he's in a woman's dress.
No, if anything, yeah.
The joke is ha ha, he's trying to be manly, and he like the masculinity is what the real joke is, which I think is great. Masculinity to the song, not the concept of masculinity, although that is also a joke. Have you gone through your little loves?
Yeah, so one of my little loves was also Song in the Sand. I like the la-di-da's part in it. It reminded me, it gave me like some Hades Town flashbacks and just really made me think that like anything with like some laws in it is really an earworm and is really gonna get stuck in your head and stay there. So I was really into that one. I like the little remarks in with Anne on My Arms that they're saying off to the side when, you know, their son singing all of this love that he has. And they're like, yeah, we've heard this before. I felt like we all know those people who say the same things over and over and we're always thinking those thoughts. So I thought those were funny. And then just, I was loving the overall just European feel, especially right now when we all haven't been able to travel. It just, I felt like it was really a cast recording that transported me somewhere. And I could like really see it all play out in my head, even though I've never seen it. And I just really liked having like a little mental trip to someplace else.
That's my little love of like every cast album.
Yep.
Just being somewhere else for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best. I was about to say, what would Harold do? But I realized we should explain it to our new friend.
Alex has not given his little loves, Kimberly Ann.
Wait, he talked before I did. I'm sorry.
What did Alex?
My first love is the first time we see Albin. They're trying to get, he's like late for his entrance and, you know, pouting because his husband has been kind of like ignoring him and he's rightfully angry. And they're making a lot of jokes of like, Albin's always late. Why can't Zaza go on now? Blah, blah, blah. And he's trying to get him out of the bedroom and he just goes, oh, when are you coming out? And he goes, darling, I've been out for 20 years. And that's great. And that's the kind of thing that, like, I think the fact that this show was written by queer people is the difference between it being a bit and being, like, a thing. Because that joke, I could even see it being, like, if you're trying to innocently make that joke, if you don't know that world, it's going to come off, like, appropriative a little bit. And so I think the fact that it was Harvey Fierstein and Jerry Herman is the difference between, like, oh, this show is going to be around. Even though we don't, like, crazily talk about the show a whole lot, this show can be revived a lot. And it's not going to be like, oh, we shouldn't be doing this one again. It's like, oh, good, another Lacage. We've grown some more since. We could kind of... grow with it. And I love Look Over There because it's a great song, but also it's at least in the version I saw, Alban is dressed in masculine clothes, and he clearly is like he almost looks sort of frail and sort of powerless because Zaza is his strength point, and Alban is sort of his, like, you know, a little more sheepish personality, and you know, the was his name George, was the husband, is saying, yeah, like, look, your mom ran out on you and you've been trying to get her back, which is understandable, but like your other dad was fulfilling that role so much better than she ever bothered to. And it's such a poignant moment because the argument that they're having, the kid is ultimately wrong, but the kid's points are also valid. He's like, yeah, I got beat up a lot because two gay dads. I also would be like, can I have a shirt? And I would get a blouse. And like, I wasn't quite heard. But and so they're it's kind of an interesting dynamic because they're not saying you're so wrong, look at everything. It's like, yes, he didn't always nail it, but look how much he cared and how much he did nail it. And it felt very real. And I think that again, like, that goes a long way with for the show aging well, is it like that's a very human dynamic that they just gave to a at the time unconventional couple. And it's seamless. It does. It's kind of almost what Falsettos does, but I think this is a lot better because just Falsettos kind of meanders a little bit for my taste. And then finally, there is in the Lacajo Fall, that 7-minute number. It's hard to explain it musically, but it's so cool. It's in a minor key, but a happy minor key, like it's triumphantly kind of like almost seedy a little bit, but like they lean into it. And so that final, you know, casual fall, and it's on a minor chord, and it feels like, what, musically it's almost like they're ending on a minor, shouldn't this be major, why is this, is I feel a little bit bad, just a little bit, but they're so happy that you're like, oh no, this is just like spice, and it I really love where it sits in the song.
Yeah. I hadn't even for thought sure about that, but yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And then I Am What I Am, but we all talked about it. So
yeah.
Yeah. Now I can explain Harold, yes?
I know Harold. I know all about Harold.
Perfect. He's a weird little old man. His phone rings a lot. What does he do at Lacage?
Yep.
Throwing my wig at him.
What if he left ashamed and then came back in a wig and we're like, duh, we know what you're doing.
That's my hope as well.
Or he has like an awakening.
Yeah. Or he's like really into it. Or I feel like he like
this. Maybe this is his favorite show.
It's a hummable tune. You know? Yeah.
It's his ringtone. Da, 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 and then it just blends in with the orchestra.
That's a question we haven't quite addressed, is if the ringtone was a song from the show, would that affect how you felt?
Depends when it played.
I don't know. That's, I think
you
I,
don't need an accidental reprise.
I think the metaphor of Harold, I think the wheels fell off of that episodes ago, like years ago.
Yeah. So.
Oh, goodness. Is there a review?
Review. This is from Chrissian. I don't know. It's hard to pronounce. It's a lot of. It kind of looks like Chris Knife from Dune, but that's my own baggage. This is great for all theater fans. 5 stars, please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars on your podcast app so that we can grow the show. This podcast is a great listen for any theater fan, whether you know these shows already or you're also new to musical theater like Alex. It's fun to listen to new cast albums and see if Alex, Kimberly, and Jay have the same reactions. And the Little Love section is a great moment to just call out some extra special parts of each show. Who doesn't want more theater conversation in their lives?
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
You can download Call Time and get all the theater conversation you want.
Brooke, welcome to the show.
We were coming back to you, bro. Don't worry. We were going to land the plane with your app. Don't worry. We got your plug, baby. We got your plug.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening. Call Time. Get it.
Sounds like a monster truck promo.
Get us on Broadway.
Oh my goodness. And Brooke, where can people find you personally? Do you have your own personal section of the app? Section profile. I don't know. Yep, what's the internet?
All good. You can find me on Instagram at bmac13 or backstage with underscore B, and call time at call time B-way.
Perfect. We'll awesome. See you there.
We will.
Perfect.
I'm downloading it now.
Love to hear.
Well,
thank
we
you.
Listen to sing out, Louise.
I stand what I stand. I am my own fangirl creation. I'll sing you a song, probably wrong in my elation. So what? I didn't act and sing when you're supposed to. Why not dive into what I was so opposed to? Your life's not your brand till you can say, hey world, I stand what I stand. I stand what I stand. I don't need clicks. I don't want pity. I just wanna feel seen, paint my nails green if I think it's pretty. It's one life, so explore that thing you thought you hated. One laugh can remind folks who have gotten jaded. Your race isn't ran till you can say, hey fam, I stand what I stand.
We kind of knew it was going to be something like that. We kind of.
But there it is.
I'm young.